for listening to Heart of Mind Radio over the Progressive Radio Network, PRN.FM. My name is Catherine, and on today's program, we're going to be looking at a very special event that's coming up very soon. It's the Art of Dying Conference, Spiritual, Scientific, and Practical to Living and Dying. And it spans from October 13th to the 16th of this year. And you can find out more at theopencenter.org, sponsored by the Open Center. And I'll give you a little more information on that in a little while. But right now, I want to introduce my guest for this first segment, Amy Cunningham. And she is a progressive funeral director and owner of Fitting Tribute Funeral Services. And she specializes in green burials in cemeteries certified by the Green Burial Council. Simple burials within the New York City metropolitan area, home funerals, and cremation services at Greenwood Cemetery's crematory chapels. And she maintains a lively blog on her funeral planning called theinspiredfuneral.com. And we will learn more about her work, but first I want to say hello and welcome Amy Cunningham to Heart of Mind Radio.
Hi, Catherine. I'm so happy that we're together.
Yes, thank you. And I really want to thank you for taking the time this morning to interrupt your schedule to be with us, because I find this to be such an interesting topic. It's the topic nobody wants to talk about and nobody
exactly
wants to think about. But I think for those of us who have a mind towards ecology and want to have a simple transitional process, I think this is an important conversation to have. So can you tell us something about your services? Because my understanding is that it's not just about the burial services, but you work with the family, you work with the tribute, and all aspects of this process. So please tell us something of what it is that you do.
That's exactly right. Well, you know, for decades now, New Yorkers have been recycling and eating well and healthier and caring about the environment. And as the baby boom has aged, our eyes now are turning to the end of life period and the funeral. And we've realized that we've neglected it and that the funeral industry has not been especially earth-friendly, and the options, if we don't know any better, the options provided to us are not in keeping with our values. So I was electrified, as sad a time as it was, when my father died in the care of hospice down in South Carolina. In the 3 days after his death, my brother, sister, and I created a very beautiful funeral service for him down there. And I came back to Brooklyn, and I said to my husband, you know, we did such a great job with Dad's funeral. I think I would like to help more people do that. I was a writer and journalist at the time, so I got into the greening of the funeral business. My own father's service involved just a very simple cremation, but the more I read, the more people I met, the more teachers I studied with, the more I realized that there's a real opportunity for us all to turn our eyes to the funeral and do it differently, which means without chemical embalming, when we can skip that, and then an eco-friendly casket, which is made of pine or some biodegradable wood, without any nails. And then sometimes in some of the eco-friendly cemeteries in the state of New York, and there are now 14 of them, I list them on my blog, they allow you to bury without a casket at all. The body can be wrapped in a burial shroud the old-fashioned way, and carefully, gently laid into the earth to return to Mother Nature. Why fight her, right? And so eco-friendly burial is all about sustainability and returning our bodies to that from which we came. Cremation is something I help people manage, too, here in the city, if they don't want to make that drive upstate to a cemetery there. And that can be done carefully, and we're very blessed in New York City to have a Greenwood Cemetery, which has a busy and fuel-efficient crematory there. So everything in my practice is about being natural and authentic. Mm. Does that help you understand it?
Yeah, that sounds great. And I think that it is something that if I were in the position of making a decision about my sort of what would happen to my final remains, it's certainly something that I would want to consider, because it just seems so much more holistic and wholesome, and it doesn't really, the way the body moves through the earth has nothing to do with the release of spirit from the body. I'm one who believes that there is no ultimate death of the life force that we carry with us. And so it's an interesting way of being able to consider these plans, as well as, you know, for ecological reasons, but just for the sort of cleanness of it, and you know, the ability to move through that transition in the same way that we move through life. And so I personally would want to take that into my own hands and sort of figure out that this is what I want. Is that something
exactly
that you have?
And it's it can be a savings as well. You can save money by emphasizing humility and simplicity in your end of life plans, in addition to sustainability. So I'm finding that more and more people, and when they hear about it, they're quite animated. And, of course, no one looks forward to death exactly, but death is not a failure either. It's going to happen to all of us, and the Open Center conference is filled with speakers like me who are trying to put death in a new light.
I know. And we're going to talk a little bit about that as well for people, because this is really the Art of Dying conference is about spiritual, scientific, and practical approaches to living and dying. So it's really about the art of living as much as it is about the art of dying. And I find that we really, if we can, as responsible people, begin to make some of these decisions for ourselves, and it's especially easy to do when we're younger and healthier, it's a way of really releasing our family from going through these changes and having to make these decisions at a time when they might be consumed by grief. So I would love to do something like this so that when my time comes for transition, my family, you know, just has to show up. So for me, that would be a great comfort to me, just as a human being, to be able to do that. And also to be able to make a decision that I actually, I feel good about my remains becoming part of the earth, maybe becoming part of the roots of trees, maybe, you know, so I find that very comforting. So
it
I'd like
is.
To get that, So I would also, I'm sorry, go ahead.
Well, sometimes in my workshops when we sketch out our directives and our funeral plans, We realize that there are things in our life that we haven't yet accomplished or done or reconciled, and so it's actually quite inspiring. It does throw us back into the lives as we're living them, because in planning for death, you'll have ideas about how you better want to live. Maybe painting the staircase. When I turned 50, I realized that I always admired people who painted the interiors of their homes. And when I turned 50, I finally thought, well, it's now or never, and I stenciled the staircase in our Brooklyn home. And, you know, when you think about things ending, you realize there's a lot you have yet to live. So over and over again, people skip out of these workshops quite elated and happy to have come, also with new friendships in place, because death has awakened them to how to live a better life.
Well, can you speak more about that in relationship to the workshop that you're going to be offering at the Art of Dying conference? Because that actually never occurred to me.
Sorry. Hold on.
That's okay. We love animals.
Maybe you can edit that. Hold on. Let me get my husband.
No. Just keep going. So it's fine.
I'm back.
So one of the things that we can that we come to is to in thinking about these, making these final plans, it puts into perspective how to make the most of our life that we actually are living in. That is our present moment. So that to me sounds quite remarkable. Can you give us some idea of how this comes about in your workshops?
Well, I show a lot of pictures of funerals, people who've managed their funeral in inspiring ways. I show slides of a gentleman who just, as he was dying, wanted a particular kind of champagne served at his service, and just simple gestures of generosity and sweetness, and we talk about writing a credo. What is it that our lives have stood for? What simple wisdom have we acquired in our time on earth that we could pass on in the form of a letter to our loved ones? And there are lots of inspiring exercises and just the images of funerals that are creative and natural and sort of wild makes us fear death less and think that the planning could actually be enjoyable. One easy exercise and a fun way into it is to create your funeral playlist. What are your favorite pieces of music that you want to stand for you in the event of your death at your service, whatever service you might have? And put smiles on people's faces, and people often turn to me at the end of the workshop and say, "I hadn't realized that funeral planning would be this fun." So that's that's good feedback. We laugh a lot, and you really feel full. And death can be a completion of our lives instead of a tragedy. You know, too often you hear a gentleman lost his battle with cancer. We think of death as a lost battle and a tragedy, and I and the other teachers are really trying to put a different face on that and help folks see it in a different way.
That is true. And you speak to the family's experience, you know, based on some of even your own father's ceremony and other people who have created ceremonies. How has that helped with the family's transition?
Oh, you're good to bring that up. It's a gift to a family to know each other's plans and thoughts on the subject, because then they, as you said, they can grieve instead of making decisions worth thousands of dollars. And planning a service can be very stressful, figuring out what somebody wanted. That's not what you might best be doing in the event of a death in your family. And these conversations are just instrumental, and also quite enlightening. Sometimes a relative of yours may have quite a different idea than what you assumed they would want. So, and then it's also an interesting conversation is who is the funeral for, the dead or the living? We get into that a little bit because while we want to honor the deceased, a service is for us too, and we're grieving and we want to engage in a ritual that will send us out the door with a new lease on life and a way to see the grieving year as something that can be rewarding and fill us up rather than deplete us. Mm-hmm. So the more talking, the more planning, the more conferences like The Art of Dying, the better.
Absolutely.
And I think baby boomers have always done things differently, and we're going to do death differently as well.
Okay. Well, I agree with you. I think that many of us will want to have that be a healing experience for our families, and certainly we want it to be harmonious with the natural flow of the earth. And who knows what else people can plan, because in a way, this could be like your final, it may be final, but it could be like a performance. People can do anything, I suppose, have poetry read, have messages from themselves to deliver. I'm sure they could have a ceremony based on their culture. Maybe it would be something of an African culture or maybe a Celtic culture or African. That they can sort of move all of this into it. And in this process could be a way of even introducing future generations to a whole nother way of being as we convert it back into this more natural process. Certainly,
you know, Catherine, there's one, you're reminding me of something that I've neglected to say to you. My teacher, Olivia Barham, who's a Los Angeles death midwife, she's a death midwife in L.A. With her own practice, and she teaches, and she's coming to New York for the first time for the Art of Dying conference, and she's giving an as part of the conference, she's giving an all-day symposium in death midwifery, which is important to anyone doing any kind of hospice volunteering or hospice social work or nursing, but also to anyone who has an elderly relative and is expecting a death in the relatively near future. And Olivia teaches at the symposium the care of the physical body of the dead after death. And we're also death phobic that, and we've allowed death to become a medical event instead of a communal experience, that we've cultivated a tendency to stand back somewhat fearfully when someone does die. And Olivia is so lovely and teaches us to comb the hair of the deceased, maybe anoint with essential oils, whatever is your custom or your practice or your inclination. And she gives some very practical basic tools in managing a death when supervised by hospice or a hospital desk. There's things you can do and time you are allowed in that hospital room when somebody dies that can be better used. And then I have a website that has readings for end of life where I divide the end of life period into 9 phases from before death to the year anniversary of the death with readings and blessings and scripture for those who are religiously inclined for each of those phases. So I'm excited that Olivia is coming to teach as well as some of the other noted speakers that are part of the program. It's going to be great.
Yeah, I really love that because it's weaving this process back into being a holistic part of our experience. And I think that sometimes people become so alienated from death that two things occur. They are sick, and they will not go to the hospitals and not attend the dying in the process. And I actually think that that extends the grieving because they're so disconnected from it. I was in attendance with my paternal grandfather and, you know, with friends where I would just sit at the bedside and hold their hand through the whole process. And it becomes very gentle when you can do that in an environment where the person is, you know, at peace. And so I really do recommend hospice. I would certainly prefer hospice to a hospital setting.
Yes.
But wherever it is, I think if you have someone there and if you could be there to witness the event, to hold the person's hand, or even to just be able to witness the actual energy of the spirit leaving the body, which is how I interpret it, to me it becomes very visibly clear that the person is simply moving into another space of existence. And what I've learned from, you know, people having near-death experiences, that the person is kind of around for a little bit before moving on to that next expression. So to me, it would feel very sacred to be able to tenderly treat that person, comb their hair, maybe put a little scented oil, just as a way of comforting the spirit of the person as well as comforting myself. So I can actually relate quite well.
Yes, no matter what your belief system, it's healing to stay in the room and be with the experience. The great Buddhist teacher Frank Ostaszewski, who was one of the founders of the famous Zen hospice program in San Francisco, he says, when you put your hands on death, you learn things that the culture needs. And you move through the deaths of pets, of deaths of elder relatives, and then as you age, you prepare for your own death, we get better at it. We should never chastise ourselves for perhaps not doing our best or not being educated in our earlier years, because as the more experiences we have with death in our lives, as you know, the more we master it. And it's a great teaching, the greatest teaching that life can provide us, because we're really preparing for our own separation from our loved ones, and that's a life's work.
It absolutely is, and I coming up in our next segment, I'm going to play an excerpt of a talk that I had with Robert Thurman. And
oh, great.
He really goes into that Tibetan Book of the Dead that talks about the bardo, the in-between space, as a way not of just of preparation, but also of bringing ourselves closer to that, our own spiritual inner nature, before we even come close to thinking that that's we're at that transitional point. So from my perspective, what you're offering and what he offers really does give us insight into how to live our lives with more meaning.
Exactly.
By not being fearful of
yes.
whatever this eventual outcome might be.
And these teachings are so helpful for any kind of separation. Sending kids that we raised off to college, or breaking up with a boyfriend, lover, or partner. Our culture does not teach us how to say goodbye very well. So we're trying to help people master this and think about it. And it's really deeply, deeply healing and such exciting work. I feel very, very blessed to be engaged in funerals and end-of-life ritual. I'm 62 years old now. I found this work late in life. I was a writer, and it's been the most amazing, transformative experience. And I really am seeing the best of people when I work with a family around a funeral. I don't see division. I really see a lot of people wanting to do their best for someone and wanting to do the right thing, and now wanting to do the sustainable and eco-friendly thing as well.
Excellent. And how can people make contact with you if they want to get to you, reach you directly? And then I'm going to, as you sign off, go into a little bit more on the conference to let people know.
That's great. That's great. Mm-hmm. I hope a lot of people come. The best way to reach me is through my website. I have two of them. The funeral home website is at sittingtributefunerals.com. That's sitting with an F. A lot of people think I'm saying sitting tribute. Sittingtributefunerals.com. And then my blog and all my funeral ideas and my work with another celebrant named Katie Ann Unalisi, theinspiredfuneral.com is where you'll find a lot of end-of-life readings and ideas. That's the, T-H-E, inspiredfuneral.com.
Alrighty.
My phone numbers are there and everything's there.
Okay,
so I love to talk to people and help them think it all out.
Thank you. I'm so happy you were able to make time for us today. I appreciate having you on the show. Thank you very much.
Thank you for your special understanding, Catherine, and your passion for this subject. I really appreciate that. So I hope to see you there.
I'll be there. Hopefully I'll see you there, too.
Good. All right. Be well. Thanks again for this opportunity. Goodbye, everyone.
Bye-bye now.
See you.
And bye-bye. You're listening to Heart of Mind Radio over the Progressive Radio Network, PRN.FM. And in a few moments, we're going to be hearing a segment recorded a few days ago by Robert Thurman, PhD, a professor of Indo-Tibetan Buddhist Studies in the Department of Religion at Columbia University. He's the president of Tibet House and president of the American Institute of Buddhist Studies. And we'll reintroduce him more completely as we move into that segment. It was absolutely fascinating speaking about the in-between space, which I feel confident that we are capable of engaging in as part of our spiritual practice in the now. I don't feel it's necessary, certainly, to wait until a transitional moment to recognize that we have this deep power within us. Just to remind you, we've been speaking of the Art of Dying Conference, Spiritual, Scientific, and Practical Approaches to Living and Dying. The Art of Dying Conference series speaks to the progressive awakening of our culture to a more conscious view of our own mortality. Death and dying are topics that are discussed with increasing openness and with an awareness that our view of death profoundly impacts our experience of life. I certainly agree with that, because if we are living in fear, we're going to have a more conflicted life expression. So I most definitely would say that this is a great opportunity for you to go to this conference at the New York Open Center. You can go to the Open Center website, opencenter.org, and you can register there. And if you go to the PRN.FM archive page in the next week, you will be able to find some links there where you can attend the conference. You can also request scholarships to the conference, And if I can, I may even be able to provide a link where you can receive a discount. So hopefully you'll go to prn.fm and you will find the links there and you will do a deeper research into this Art of Dying conference, spiritual, scientific, and practical approaches to living and dying. I am one who has had a close relationship to this experience. I think we all have that opportunity, but we don't always, we can't move through that fear to be able to be there for the persons in our lives that are having this experience. And this is one of the really important parts of this conference is that we can begin to move through that apprehension and fear and tenseness about being able to really move with a person through this journey, to be able to talk to them, to be able to help them to ease their way. And I think this is something that the living has in the past done, and we are in need of moving into that space again, certainly because too many of our relatives end up isolated in hospitals and nursing homes and being faced with going through this experience alone. And if we, in a loving way, can make a difference for those people in our lives that we truly care about, this is a help, because not that there should be guilt about that, but if we could move away obstacles to that level of suffering on the part of our relatives, on the part of ourselves, I think that would be extremely valuable for us to do. So please go to theopencenter.org. There's you could click right on to the Art of Dying underneath the banner. And when you go to the page, you'll see how to register. You'll be able to see all the many, many, many people who are participating in the conference. And now we're going to go to another interview, as I described. And to me, this was a most exciting interview because Robert Thurman, he's known as Tenzin Thurman, he is very closely related to His Holiness the Dalai Lama, and he is a part of the in the Ecumenical Order of Tibetan Buddhism that is connected to the Dalai Lama. And so he has such a long history of understanding the wisdom of the Tibetan Buddhists, not from a religious perspective, but in terms of really understanding the realms of experience. The living experience, the in-between experience, and the after experience. So I invite you to stay tuned. We're going to do a full interview coming up right now. So please do stay tuned.
Robert Tenzin Thurman, PhD, a professor of Indo-Tibetan Buddhist Studies in the Department of Religion at Columbia University. He's president of Tibet House in the U.S. and president of the American Institute of Buddhist Studies, which is dedicated to the publication of translations of important Tibetan artistic and scientific treaties. He is the author of many books on Tibetan Buddhism, art, politics, and culture, and is a Vajrasana Buddhist priest. And His Holiness the Dalai Lama, Ecumenical Order of Tibetan Buddhism. Robert Tenzin Thurman, PhD, is a professor of religion at Columbia University and Vajrasana in His Holiness the Dalai Lama's Ecumenical Order of Tibetan Buddhism. Welcome so much to the program.
Thank you.
We're so happy to have you here, and for many reasons, because you have such a tremendous perspective to offer us on life as much as the whole idea of death and dying. And I know you're going to be presenting at this conference, and I'm encouraging folks to participate so they can get the full breadth of what you have to offer. But I would invite you to introduce whatever idea you want to introduce at this time with regard to the wisdom of Tibetan Buddhism and the art of living and dying.
Okay. Well, thank you very much. That's awfully nice of you. And Tibetans had a very realistic society, and they, especially since for about the last 500 years, they have been a more or less demilitarized society. And I did have the joy of translating a version of the Tibetan Book of the Dead, which has a number of versions out there, but I did another one. And in the process of doing that, it gave me pause as to why particularly the Tibetan society had such a popular book that sort of was based on people living close to death while being alive. And I was trying to figure out why is it the science of this was known in India, the science of the dying process and the after-death process, which are very interconnected in those cultures, and very well known in India, but India never produced a popular book of this type, which they then did. They used the Indian science, subtle science about that, and they produced in Tibet. And then finally, I think I figured it out. It had to do with the demilitarization of Tibet. If you have a country where the elite or the ruling power, at least occasionally, if not all the time, wants people to go to war and wants people to serve sort of using their life in service to the ruler in that life and death way in war and in otherwise just spending all their time that way, then it's better that they live more in denial and in unawareness of their death. And they act like they're going to always sort of be going on, so there's no rush about anything. And because when you confront your death while alive, even perfectly healthy, even young, then it makes you want to use your moments of life very meaningfully and purposefully. And you're a little bit loath to jump into someone's army and go off and get killed so they can win a few acres away from their neighbor or other kinds of sort of pointless activity for you as an individual. And you sort of want to, like, flourish as best you can in this life moment by moment. So then you are automatically interested in methodologies that they teach in Buddhism, like mindfulness, being in the moment, cultivating virtue, shifting your negative habits into positive ones and so on, and virtuous ones. And but in a way, it makes you a bit less manageable by the authority. So authoritarian societies, and all militaristic societies are in some sense authoritarian, whatever their theories about whether people are free or not, all authoritarian societies seek to suppress people's confronting the reality that they're going to die, that their life is of a limited time, and that when they do, then lots of the different things that they are doing will end up being sort of useless to them. You know, like how much you have in the bank doesn't really help when you're dying. You know, once you die, it's gone. You know, someone else will write those checks. When you even some of your relationships will no longer be important. Your possessions, your house, your clothing, all sorts of things, even your sort of, the shape of your body and your physical beauty and strength and so forth, these things all become less relevant when you leave your body. And so they become, it doesn't mean that you then neglect yourself entirely, but it means that you reorder your priorities. And you especially, you decide you want to get in charge of your own unconscious. You want to get in charge of the impulses in your mind. You want to make sure that if there is an after-death state, even if you don't have a belief in one, if there is one, that your mind will be clear, you will have powers of concentration, you will be fearless, and you won't get into sort of dark, shadowy, nightmarish type of situations. So I think that I came up away from my work on the Book of the Dead with that lesson. And then the second question is, how does that apply to our living situation nowadays? And actually, we live in a rather militaristic society and also industrially highly organized, where we're taught that our self-worth entirely depends on how much we produce, rather than that we have an intrinsic self-worth that we just, because we are, we are, therefore we are worthy. We don't really, that's something you have to strive to achieve, such an insight, because we're not taught that. So in our society, being aware of death for a quite healthy living person is very, very valuable. And then we do, of course, have a lot of people dying. And as we grow older, a lot of our friends go, dear ones go, and then we will go. But before that, we probably will have a lot of people we know go. Now, and now, what can we do for them? What does this sense of the Book of the Dead, the science of death, you could call it, that the Tibetans cultivated, the Indians and Tibetans particularly cultivated, what does that have to do? How can we help others with that? And therefore, like, what am I doing in the Art of Dying conference? What am I talking about? Well, what I'm talking about is that I think it helps people to have a map of the dying and especially the after-dying process, what the Tibetans call the bardo, which literally translates and which I call in English the between. And so the between is like a dreamlike state in which your mind awakens after some period of time after you die, because at first you're kind of like in a coma. You're like out of it, you know, as far as your normal consciousness goes, because you don't have any sense faculties, because they've all shut down, you know. But then you do awake, and just as when you go in a deep sleep at night and shut down your sense organ functioning, you then wake up in a dream, and in the dream you have an environment around you, and you have a feeling of being in a subjectivity in the environment, and even being a body in the environment. Although often you're kind of unaware of your body and you just feel you're a point of awareness in a dream. And this is the same thing that happens in the between after death. And so then there are certain types of things that are described in the Book of the Dead and how should you react, and some instructions as to how you should react to them. There's instructions about, because at first, when you die, you don't kind of know you die. When you come up awake like that, and you think like, wait a minute, I'm just here, and you run over to some dear one or near one, and you try to attract their attention, and you sort of go right through them, and they don't see you, and they don't feel you. And maybe some intuitives might, but mostly they don't. You know, you're in a sort of ghostly, a little bit phase in relating to the previous solid reality. And then also you can have visions in the between reality that are frightening, sort of big boulders falling on you, or being in a hurricane or an earthquake or some fierce animals pursuing you, wolves or something, and you can be very frightened, or some people giving you a hard time. You can have nightmarish things. You can also have pleasant things. And how to steer your consciousness with its subtle sort of virtual embodiment that it has in that is something that the instructions are very, very valuable for. Even the instruction to you that that's what's happening to you, because you tend to be confused after you die. Now, some people might say, well, most of us in modern times, we don't expect to have any after-death experience, and even science sort of tells us that our brain, when it stops, we no longer have subjective experience. And that's questionable. On what basis does science tell us that? Actually, there's no evidence that science has gathered of somebody not existing. They didn't find any non-existent people. They do find bodies that no longer have minds in them, so that, you know, the brain no longer functions, the heart no longer beats. So then one thing they verify, that there's no consciousness in the body. Well, we agree. The Tibetans agree with that. But the scientists have not found a lack of consciousness elsewhere. They don't find consciousness being present in nothing for the simple reason that they've never found nothing. And not only that is the simple reason, but in principle, they never will find nothing. Nobody can find nothing. Nothing is nothing, and therefore you can't find it. That's what it means. And so the idea that that consciousness, which is a continuum of energy while alive, that it suddenly becomes nothing is really very irrational, and it's an unevidenced proposition. It's not actually a known truth based on experience or discovery. That's not true. And actually, everybody subliminally, kind of, even the most convinced materialist, Carl Sagan, if you will, my grandfather, convinced materialist, you know, nothing to do with religions and all that, they have an unconscious fear that maybe they will have a further consciousness as they're facing death. They kind of worry about it. Therefore, sometimes they will call in a rabbi or a minister or a priest and, you know, ask for some sort of blessing. And they will also definitely, everyone will call in all their relatives and their dear ones or even enemies and try to express forgiveness or receive forgiveness. People do that because I mean, they wouldn't really care if they were sure, subconsciously as well as consciously, as well as in theory, if they were really sure they would become nothing, then why bother to forgive anybody or do anything? It doesn't mean anything because you're just going to not exist. So I believe, and what I like to contribute in the Art of Dying conferences that we've held for years with the Open Center, and wonderful, wonderful contribution that they do in society, they're carrying on themselves, and that is to provide plausible maps to people who are facing death, as we all are, no matter how young and healthy we may be, and of what you might expect. And, you know, to echo Blaise Pascal, the famous French mathematician, you know, you kind of wager that it's a no-lose wager in the sense that you say, well, if nothing happens after death and I really have no awareness forever, like the materialists say, then I will not be regretting that I learned about some possible maps of after-death experience because I won't exist. But if I do have to navigate some after-death experience, then it would be very good that I'm prepared for that. And so I might as well prepare, especially since it doesn't take a whole lot of time. And that's sort of my contribution. And then people can go in a more secure and confident manner to face death. And, of course, they will immediately, one of the wonderful things about the between teachings, or what you might call the bardo teachings of the Tibetans, is that the minute you become fully, you leave denial that you're going to die and you fully face the fact of your death whenever it may be, well, and also you face the fact that you don't know exactly when it will be, could be any time, then this makes you realize that here in life you're in a transition phase also. And you are, you know, everything changes all the time around you in life. And in a way, life is called the life between birth and death. And in that between, there's tremendous options of what to do and how to do it. You can get better and better at different things. You can feel better and better and be happier and happier. Or you can get worse and worse and be more and more miserable. There's all kinds of things that, you know, are different ways of traversing this life or the between of this life. And so then you suddenly see this life in a different light, and you realize the value of every moment of your awareness, and you want to be mindful of that awareness, and you want to be aware in the most lucid and positive and loving and wise way so as to maximize the purpose of this life and also to be of help to others and have more also fun and bring more fun to others. So that's sort of what my piece of it is, you know. And, of course, there's a lot of detail in that. It connects very nicely with what some other presenters will be presenting in the conference, which are the people who are experts in the near-death experience, reports that we have from many people who clinically were supposed to have died, or their brain stopped temporarily, their heart stopped temporarily, and then they were revived and so for some reason, sometimes due to medical intervention and sometimes just miraculously without anybody knowing why. And they all have a tale to tell, and there's a lot of resemblances of the tale to tell, so much so that you begin to develop a kind of composite picture of what the dying process is like. Although since they finally don't die, that is, they come back, you know, the bardo, the between process may be more complex and more profound in a way, but still the near-death experience is very powerful for many people. It changes the way they live life afterwards totally, and it gives the one who becomes familiar with that literature and those many very, very vital and vivid reports, it gives them a sense of what it might be like, and it fits beautifully, dovetails very, very well with the Tibetan descriptions of the between state. And so that's also when I go to these conferences and present myself, I always try to go to those near-death experience people. And also people who, on the basis of other spiritual traditions, do present ways of focusing at the time of death and the time of dying. And although they don't, none of them that I know of have anything quite as systematic as the Tibetan one, which is unique, I believe, on the planet. They still have quite a good sense of what you may expect and what you should look for and how you should prepare yourself. And that's all also very, very interesting. And so that's the thing.
Excellent.
Do you have other questions?
Well, I had an experience myself where, when my mother, not a near-death experience from the conventional sense, but when my mother passed away, I was with her.
Uh-huh.
And I had this experience, we had a very close relationship, as she was dying, leaving, I could mm-hmm. feel my essence sort of falling into her eyes, and I found myself drawn into this other sort of expansive space
wow.
that I might have stayed in had not the doctors come in and disturbed us. But it was very interesting to me that having that experience, and then a little bit later, after, you know, maybe 6 months after she was gone, I had this experience where I felt myself moving down that white hallway or that white light that people
yes.
tell you about, and at the end of it, I entered a room and she was there.
Wow,
and so,
wonderful.
And we had this communication. And then afterwards, I wasn't planning to leave, but she convinced me to leave. And I found myself walking back down this hallway. And then I opened a door. And as I opened that door, I was stepping into my living room. And then I went and I felt like I was sitting. I sat down into my body. So it felt like an out-of-body experience. I had no language for it.
Amazing.
But
that's
I was
wonderful.
But I was wondering if you could translate like this in-between space as something that's a part of us now, if we could
yes,
expand
that
to
is,
it.
Actually, you're reminding me of another thing that I do when I give a longer talk, and that is I have received, actually my translation of the Book of the Dead and my study of the process is my best-selling book by far, and I've had letters from all over the world of people who've had a very happy experience with it, who are the bereaved people, who are seeing someone off, like you're describing, and someone off into the travel of that undiscovered country, as Hamlet calls it, you know, from whose bourne no traveler returns. Although we don't agree with Shakespeare that no one returns, they actually do return. But anyway. That is when people's dear ones die, and then they have this, you know, our cultural thing is to get all grieving and mournful and all so miserable, and we will cry and we will grieve, and that's normal and healthy, of course, but rather than just emphasizing that, there's a sense of the continuity of the person in the between who has gone. And then the Book of the Dead gives these prayers and instructions and things which one can read and direct the reading to the person who is gone on the basis that in the early days of the between, not the very first day or two, but then after that, the early days, when the traveler, the departed is in the between, they are aware of what their dear ones think and say and even how they feel, which is why one's supposed to stay a little cheery. Like that's why Irish wake is a very good cultural, that gains the stamp of approval of the Tibetans, the Irish wake, where people are kind of jolly at the death, at least for a while, and they may take months and years grieving, too, after that. But there's the cultural thing of where you have a party sort of for the departed, and you send out a feeling of good cheer, which is communicated emotionally to the departed who are hovering around, and it gives them a feeling of confidence, because they're confused. And then if their dear ones are in a state of freak out, then they think maybe something terrible has happened and they become more fearful and it's more difficult for them to navigate. And also the bereaved person, even whether or not in a particular case the one who has departed actually hears them. Maybe they're distracted by something else or they've gone off to the other side of the galaxy. No one knows. But whether or not the ones who are bereaved have a wonderful feeling that they are communicating with the departed, and usually they are, actually. And it's a wonderful thing. It's like, okay, dear Madeline, please don't be afraid if you see something. And you have a wonderful moment now where you are very, very enlightened, actually, and you're clairvoyant, and you can read my mind, and you know this and that, and you must focus on, you want to go to a good place. you want to be reborn in a good way or go to a nice heaven, and these are the different heavens, and this is how you do it. And if you see a certain light, go for the bright light, even like a strobe or something, like a discotheque. Don't go for a dark, shadowy place, you know, because the light seems too bright. And you give this kind of instruction, and the bereaved people feel very pleased and happy that they are able to communicate. And by thinking that they are going to, they sometimes do have experiences, although yours is particularly profound and vivid, both of them, the initial one where you interrupted, and then later where you went down a corridor kind of in the light and then went in a room and there was Mom. I mean, that's wonderful. That's so lucky of you to have that. That changed your life, I'm sure, you know.
Yeah, it was a defining moment.
And so that's a second bonus of this idea of mapping the condition and mapping the process and helping people get a handle. And it doesn't mean that one nice thing about Buddhist science is that they are like modern science in that they think they're not absolutist. In other words, they don't think that just the way we describe it is how it has to be. They're flexible, and you know it'll be a little different for this person and that person. They're aware of that, and they're open to that. And so it doesn't matter. It's not that, you know, the person, you know, 2 days after dying, remembering the Book of the Dead, and they're having a different kind of experience, and they want a refund. It isn't that sort of situation. It's rather, oh, yeah, it was, this is like what that was, but for me it's this way. Do you know what I mean?
Mm-hmm.
And I put that in my Book of the Dead. You know, with someone who's a Christian, for example, they can expect to meet Jesus if they're fortunate, or an angel. Or if someone's Jewish, they can meet an angel, you know, Michael or Gabriel or something. And if they're Muslim, they'll meet Khidr. Al-Khidr, you know, Muslims have some angels too, et cetera. You know, if they're Hindus, they'll meet Krishna. If they're Taoists, they'll meet Zhuangzi, I think, in the form of a butterfly. So, you know, that's, so I've tried to build that in, that people should not get fixated on just this Buddhist symbolism, and the guide that you might meet will look just exactly like this. It might look like something else for you.
It may look like an ancestor.
So what you say, which you happen because of your personal affinity and your sensitivity, a lot of people wouldn't have had that experience, but if they study the between and they look at this kind of map of it, and look at it sort of technically, then this might help them open up to having such a wonderful experience as you had.
Thank you so much. I can't tell you how wonderful it's been to talk to you.
It's been very nice and, talking to you.
I'm definitely
moved by your experience.
Thank you. I'm definitely want to invite you back.
And you have been listening to the wonderful Robert Tenzin Thurman, a professor of Indo-Tibetan Buddhist Studies in the Department of Religion at Columbia University. He is president of Tibet House in the U.S. and president of the American Institute of Buddhist Studies, which is dedicated to the publication of translations of important Tibetan artistic and scientific treatises. And he is the author of many books himself, so I do invite you to check out Robert Thurman, Thurman. You can find much about his work on the internet, and I invite you to check it out. I just wanted to remind you that you have been listening to and are listening to Heart of Mind Radio here over the Progressive Radio Network, PRN.FM. And for those of you who would like to learn more about me and the work that I do, you can also find that on the website of the Progressive Radio Network. Just look up the archive page, Heart of Mind Radio, and you'll find information for today's show. You may have to wait till the beginning of the week to find it there, but hopefully you will go in there and listen to this program again and share it if you can. Perhaps there's someone in your life who would benefit from what we had on today's program. I invite you to share that with your friends and your family. And for those of you who want to connect more closely, I would invite you to participate in one of our upcoming events. We have actually ongoing events. On Saturdays at 2:30, we have a meditation and movement body wellness and stress reduction class where you can restore your vitality, lubricate your joints, stretch your muscles, ease your mind, and let go of body tension, and awaken a natural state of inner peace. That's Saturdays at 2:30 at Studio Maya in Brooklyn, 603 Bergen Street, Brooklyn, New York, between Carlton and Vanderbilt. It is not prohibitive, only $20 for a session. So you can come in. Generally speaking, you can drop in, but just in case, to ensure that we actually are there on the day or that something hasn't changed, it's always good to confirm. And you can do that by heartofmindradio@gmail.com, or you can do that by phone 347-480-1694. That's 347-480-1694. Leave a message, and I will get back to you as quickly as I can. But don't give up if I don't get your call. Sometimes the overwhelm is a delay. We also have a Heart of Mind spiritual support group, and we do various things during the support group. It features a healing circle. So for those who have body issues or emotional issues, we do hands-on healing. We have conversation and network. We also do shamanic ritual and ceremony, trance dance, breath practices, and meditation. So the practices vary from month to month, and it is a monthly group, the third Wednesday of the month. And our meeting for this month is October 20th from 7 to 9 p.m. at Janana Yoga, 97 Bond Street. It's the ground floor in Brooklyn, between Atlantic and Pacific. A suggested donation also, very, very reasonable at $20 for that. But we don't turn people away. Just to know, we have to cover costs, but we never turn people away if, for whatever reason, you are not able to do that. You can contact myself at heartofmindradio@gmail.com or by calling 347-480-1694 and leaving a message there. And I want to thank you very much for joining us here over Heart of Mind Radio. And this program hosted by myself, Catherine Davis. We have another Heart of Mind Radio on WBAI. You might want to check that out as well. And or you might want to connect with me for consultation and healing. I'm a certified Qigong teacher, energy vibrational healer, mystic, and spiritual doula. So I certainly wish you the most blessings to befall you as much as is certainly possible. I hope that you are able to find abundance in your life, and that things flow with a good energy and with the best possible outcomes and potentials. I want to thank you for joining me today here over Heart of Mind Radio at PRN.FM. I've been Catherine Davis, and please do stay tuned for more great programming over the Progressive Radio Network, PRN.FM. And bye for now.